5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul. I am Paul.
And I'm Sarah. And today's insane nail-biter of a cliff-hanging adrenaline rush is titled simply Go, possibly because that's what we were all shouting at the screen as we watch it. And it was also written by today's guest. Paul, do you want to tell the people who we're going to talk with today?
We get to talk to Mr. Matt Olmsted, who is an extraordinary writer who became the showrunner from seasons 2 to 4. We're going to skip a bunch of our banter today because we have so much. We've been, since season episode 1, basically, we've been saying we need to ask Olmsted about that. We need to ask Olmsted about that. And now we finally have him. So let's just get right into the Calestine Index and we'll get all the Olmsted time we can.
Outstanding. Okay, Calestine Index Go premiered on May 8th, 2006, putting it, I believe, in May Sweeps territory. We can talk about what that was later. It was written, as we mentioned, by the great Matt Olmsted, directed by Dean White. It drew 9.13 million viewers. And before you think you know the competition in the time slot by now, also in our Monday at 8 p.m. slot this week was David Blaine Drowned Alive on
Wow.
BBC. How about that? Something different. Probably better than Wife Swap Drowned Alive, the crossover that theoretically nobody wants to see. And then, of course, also on CBS was King of Queens and Deal or No Deal on NBC.
The recap of the episode reads, Michael forces Pope to transfer Lincoln to the infirmary and then locks Pope in the closet. The team secures Bellick and Michael puts on Bellick's uniform. The others wear bleached white clothes so they can get into the psych ward. Haywire joins the escape and we discover Sarah left the infirmary door unlocked. She did it. Westmoreland, sadly, dies of escape, first telling Michael to find the five, not $1 million on the outside. The other escapees overhear, but not all of them manage to get out of Fox River. Nick Saverin releases Veronica, and Abruzzi's thugs kill him. The company plans to kill Vice President Reynolds, and Pope is found at last and triggers the alarm.
Basically, everybody dies. Some other things happening in the world in pop culture around this time of May 8th, 2006. On May 9th, it was the finale of the very first season of The Real Housewives of Orange County. And the success of that season led to a massive franchise of Real Housewives spinoffs, not one of which I've ever seen, unfortunately. Or maybe fortunately. May 6th was the 132nd running of the Kentucky Derby, won by the undefeated colt Barbaro. The dramatic victory was later marred by a career-ending injury, becoming a tale of triumph and tragedy, much like this episode. On May 5th, Mission Impossible 3 hit theaters, directed by J.J. Abrams, starring Tom Cruise and the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman, who, coincidentally, Paul and I both decided last week would be on our dream list of actors living or dead to work with. That film made $47.7 million on opening day.
And I would argue is still, even though I love all those movies, the best one.
Yeah.
On May 2nd,
can't beat Phil Hoffman.
Yeah, no, as a villain. On May 2nd, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled that Anna Nicole Smith could continue her fight to claim a large part of her late husband's vast business holdings, estimated to be worth $1.6 billion. That story again, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on a case involving Anna Nicole Smith's love life. And in even weirder news, on May 4th, U.S. Representative Patrick J. Kennedy said he was under the influence of medication when he crashed his Mustang convertible into a traffic barrier 2 blocks from the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., which, yes, is one of the opening scenes of, I think, the West Wing pilot, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, the Sorkin pilot. And with that, here are the highlights from our watch party, which, of course, you can access by subscribing on Patreon on our show page, wherever you're listening right now. Ready? Let's go. Get it?
Aha, yes.
You see what I did there? Yeah, this is why I don't write comedy. World, many of the things that we put up are put up with duct tape. I apologize for thinking that was a gaffe. The gaffe, as it turns out, is mine. This is a shot of just like every butt in our cast. This is as beautiful. And that's just me trying to stay warm and stay alive there. That's not acting. That's just, that actually might have even been before they called action. I think this is probably a decision to save a brilliant actor and make sure that he comes back for next season, which is, I'm grateful for. I wonder if there was a conversation about keeping them in prison for season 2. I love the moment during this escape where they all go, oh my God, this guy is certifiable and because he's crazy like a Fox River 8.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about there. We'll be right back with writer and showrunner Matt Olmsted, folks.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Welcome back, everyone. Our guest today has been writing for television for 250 years. That's an exaggeration, but he has been on massive franchises like the Law & Order universe, the Chicago Med-PD Fire Justice universe. He's created shows like Breakout Kings and Blind Justice. He wrote 13 episodes of Prison Break and 35 episodes of one of my all-time favorite shows, NYPD Blue. Matt Olmsted, welcome.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Hi, Matt. Good to see you.
And you as well.
It's very exciting for us. We are ostensibly here to talk about episode 21, Go, which you wrote, but also as you were overseeing the room from then into perpetuity, we have so much stuff that we want to talk to you about. So we're going to try to stay on topic, but I imagine this is going to be a wide-ranging and circuitous discussion, which we're excited about.
Well, I can tell you off the top that it's one of my favorite memories of all time. Working wise. And I know you guys were in the production side, actor side. We were the writer's room. And it was just the best writer's room, best talent. They've all gone on to do great things. There's a very, very special place in my heart, Prison Break, for sure. The whole experience.
That's great.
Karen Usher said the same thing.
Yeah. We had Karen on as a guest. She was our first writer guest. And she was saying what a special group it was. And, you know, I think one of the things that is testament to that is so many writers made it through the entire run of that show. I mean, that's pretty rare that a writer's room has such little turnover in four seasons, right? I mean,
yeah, I think we maybe lost a couple and brought in two or three. We promoted two writers within who were assistants.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Hoffman,
mm-hmm.
Clint Vasquez,
mm-hmm.
and a very, very tight group. But just heavy hitters that you just don't know when you staff a show who's going to. I've been on shows where it's kind of a bloodbath by the end of the first season, unfortunately.
Sure. Right. Sorry, how did you come to the show? How did you start with us?
I'd come off of NYPD Blue. I'd been there for 7 years and did a couple pilots with Steven Brodsko. And so I was kind of a free agent, and I took some meetings and saw the pilot. We liked it. Met with Paul Schering, who created it, and Dawn Parise, who would later become my wife, Dawn Olmsted, and she was from the very beginning. So I came on after the pilot was shot.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Schering didn't have any television experience, not that maybe you needed back then. It was really important. And so they wanted to kind of bring in some experienced television people. So I came in, and a guy named Mike Pavone also came in as EP, kind of co-showrunners.
We were, go ahead.
As you know, it's hectic making a pilot, but once a pilot's picked up the series, it resembles Squid Game a little bit in terms of so many people are weighing in, people are flying out in, you have to survive it, you have to negotiate it, you have to all this. And then we got to a point where the material came in at the right time that they liked, and then everything kind of calmed down. But it was pretty hectic early when I got it.
We were talking about, you know, how, especially in those days, a pilot had huge budgets, Brett Ratner, big DP, and that the second episode then is trying to meet that level for a third of the price in a third of the time, usually.
Right.
And we talked about that on a production level and a directorial level, but in a storytelling way, you are tasked with a similar challenge. I know Michael Cudlitz was telling us, who played C.O. Bob, we had him on, that originally this was when Schering wrote it, that it was a 6-episode standalone for Fox that they then decided to turn into an entire series.
Right.
Do you remember that piece of material and saying, oh, okay, well, this is 12 episodes, we can expand this into, we can take it to 22. It was one of the questions we had for Karen. How much of this stuff was planted in the pilot? How much of it was, okay, Matt Olmsted comes in, it's like, here's what we have in the pilot. How are we going to unwind this into 22, let alone 2 seasons, 4 seasons?
Yeah. So I was brought in when they wanted 22 out of it.
Okay.
And I remember when I met with Paul Schering, his pitch was the first season is the first half of The Great Escape, and the second season is the second half of The Great Escape, which we kind of held true to.
Yeah.
But beyond that, in terms of the moves, he had a couple ideas of like the Allen wrench move on the toilet early on and a couple other things. But literally, once the staff was assembled and we're there, it's kind of like, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
But I always look back on that show and on our side of the creative side. It succeeded because of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been on shows subsequently that are more standalone episodes.
Yeah.
And so you have a little bit of the writer's room, but people peel off and do their own thing, and you can kind of move things around. But that show was so dense, and we were just chewing through story that we all had to be in the same room. So we were in the same room, you know, 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock.
Wow.
And just because of the sensibilities and the talent of all these people, who, as you point out, were there for most, for the run, 4-year run.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we got all the material from. There's no way that show succeeds if we had a different staff. There's no way.
Speaking of the density of storytelling, which is kind of much more common now, frankly. I mean, the number of twists and turns per act, it seems like there's 4 episodes in one. Was that the pilot doesn't quite feel that way. The pilot has more of a traditional television arc to it. Was that obviously it must have been a conscious decision, but where did that intensity come from? Where did the, we're gonna crank this thing up to 11 and keep it there constantly? Was that from the get-go? Was that a group discussion? Where did that come from?
Yeah, it's funny. Initially, there were the first kind of three episodes that were written and turned in, maybe on the outline stage. And the studio and network, who were both super supportive of the show and were for the whole duration of the show. And sometimes you find that. Mm-hmm. But they were on it. And this is the Squid Game part I'm talking about, where it was, this is getting tossed. I think it was Dana Walden, who was at the time the head of 20th, who's now over 80, who was like, well, shouldn't there be a riot up here? And so they were pushing for higher stakes stuff. So we had those notes that we knew we had to absorb and kind of execute. But also, each writer was assigned a script early on in the first roster. So it was 1 through 6 or 7 was each writer. And so each writer going into it, just out of their own pride and competitive spirit, was like, I have to wing it.
Right.
And I have to show everybody that I have what it takes. And I'm going
here to
like
play.
And so you saw these scripts coming in early that were just crazy. And then that kind of like launched us. And then we're like, well, we can't dip below that bar that we've set.
Yeah.
But 40 was trying to like, in the room, you're supporting each other. When you're writing by yourself, you're trying to show that I'm the best. And everybody should have that attitude.
And then what happens when that script lands on the production side and someone goes, sorry, so we're going to riot. We're going to cut a guy's toe off.
Right.
We're going to like, was there a moment where you guys would deliver these insane scripts that were so amazing and the directors would be like, super sorry, just checking in. 8 days?
Right.
8 days?
Absolutely.
Because Watkins was very, in the beginning, I remember Watkins being very game for that kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like he sort of still had that like, I'm still in a combat situation serving overseas mentality. And then there was a bit of a pivot, which was interesting, when Hooks came in, because Hooks is stoned. Like, I have never seen him rush, raise his voice, get upset. No. He is absolutely like, hey, guys, we're going to do this. It's going to be great.
Right.
And they were very different leadership styles.
Yeah.
But I wonder, was it partly a response to just one of the most ambitious shows on television at the time?
Yeah, I think it was. And in that mix the whole time, you had Gary Brown, who was the line producer. Mm. He was really our go-to guy, who was as ambitious as we were. And he was able to make all this stuff down. And he really was boots on the ground, obviously, in Chicago, and knew a lot of people, and he could move things around. So there were a couple things that were pushed back or can we redo this? But I will say, at the risk of sounding immodest, that's one of the things that I brought when I came in. There were some longer scripts and there were some helping to kind of like make this manageable and producible. Because if you're not doing that, if you're turning in material late, as you guys know, then you're just inviting people to come in to try and fix it for you. That's when it turns into a jumble.
By the way, very small detail. I just happens to have, we're going to talk about this in a second. This is my script from Go.
Oh my gosh.
The production draft was dropped February 14th, 2006. We're recording this together right now, February 15th. This blue draft dropped February 16th, 2006. It was just a weird little, like, here we are exactly 18 years later having this conversation.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you come to Chicago for, I frankly don't remember meeting you until season two, but did you come, I didn't anyway. Did you come for this? Were you still in the room? How did that go?
I came out a few times. There was a personnel change in production that didn't go over well with some actors. So I was kind of looked at as the kind of a little bit of the heavy, a little bit of the hatchet man. And people who aren't here to give their side of the story, so no need to mention names. But there was some turnover, as there was on our side creatively in L.A. And so I
had to
come out and deal with that a little bit. So that was tough to do. It's never fun to do, but then again, so I had to kind of negotiate that, but also be present and not kind of flee from it. But I was out there a lot. And that's one of the great memories about that show was how beautiful, ironically, Joliet Prison was to film in and be in, knowing that Stateville Prison, the new kind of pod prison that they built, the modern version of it, And I've been there before where I've like toured police precincts that are no longer being used because they built a modern one. You go in to see if you can film it. And people, and I probably do the same thing, but these, like, if you're making an hourly wage, you work with the government, whatever it is, when it's over, you just grab your lunchbox and walk up. Everything's still there.
Yep.
So all those mugshots were still there. All these the remnants of these lives. And plus the fact that it was built by prisoners however many hundred years ago, by in limestone quarry from nearby.
1860s, yeah.
It was, you guys spent more time than I did, but it was a beautiful, strangely enough, prison. Like when the snow would come, or even like in like in the summer. So that's also part of my memory is when I go to Joliet. Just like a very special place to film.
So many people.
It's so specific.
Yeah. And so many of the actors and directors that we've talked to talked about just the challenges but benefits of actually using that physical space to shoot it before the stages were built, shooting in the yard and shooting, you know, for a lot of big portion of season one, using the actual cells, using that using that block. And, you know, those places have a spirit to them that definitely seeps into that show.
I remember walking into a cell block and there was, in the mesh, when we built our beds, they were slightly different, but the real ones had like a mesh that the mattress sat on, and people would put photographs of loved ones under that mattress so that they were looking up at them.
Oh.
And some of them still had them. And it immediately makes everything very tangible and very personable. And something else that we've talked about a lot is the extent that Fox kind of let us get away, by us, I mean you, with a certain level of, hey, this is the death penalty. And there are references to God and Christ and Men of the Cloth. And I'm pretty sure Paul shoots a bishop in the first like two episodes of the pilot. I was sort of surprised because I would have thought that those things, I feel like if you were pitching a show today, that was like, we've got a guy on death row who's wrongfully accused, and at some point we're going to strap him to an electric chair and everyone's going to hate that. There would be a lot of nerves about politically what that could mean. Were you guys ever given any kind of pushback or guidance or?
No. And that was Sherim's thing. He liked the kind of the religious kind of the theme of it all that ran through it. But I watched the first half of the first season probably a couple of years ago with my daughter when she was old to watch it. And it's one of those things you're watching, there's no way you could shoot this stuff now.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some bold storytelling, but also like through Teabag, some of the racial stuff and some of the kind of innuendo stuff. And it went unchecked because once that show launched, and it really hadn't been like a successful serialized drama since kind of Lost, I think. And a lot of people have tried prior to that, and since it's very tough to pull off, but they had a hit and they liked the material and they really let us do our thing. But we would be in the room like, there's no way. And I would just do it. They
light up
it.
That leather donut.
There you go.
Yeah.
Made it on network television.
No.
It's almost like we were doing it so early that we sort of got in before they locked things down.
Yeah.
So, in terms of the storytelling, you were talking about writers going off and writing their scripts and upping their game. In terms of, arcing out the whole season, when you guys are staying, you're laying track as the train is coming on the track, pretty much in network, when you're doing 22 episodes. How much of the reversals, twists and turns did you... did you have figured out before you actually like went to script for episode 2, 3, 4? Because there's like, for instance, back half of the season, but did you know Abruzzi was going to come back after his throat got slit? Or was that a kind of audible, this is really playing, really love writing for this guy, let's figure out a way to get him back in? There's so many things.
Yes.
You're like, oh, I wonder if this was planted in episode 4 because it came back in episode 18. Or whether they figured out in episode 12, hey, what if we went back to this thing?
We didn't plan a lot of that out. And again, kind of chewing through story, you would look back on, and we realized this show is somewhat heightened. So there's certain allowances. The original, quote unquote, death of Sarah Tancredi wasn't the real death of Sarah Tancredi because she came back. And did we
know? The first two, actually.
Yes, I do remember.
There's a couple.
Yeah, there were a couple. But we would just kind of on the fly. Now, it wasn't like we were only writing and hurrying, getting pages together to the set, and we were like a day front of it all. We really had a board, and we beat this stuff out. But we would like, what do we have? What seeds have we planted? What fuses have we lit and intentionally that we can revisit?
Mm-hmm.
Up including the late, great Zach Estrin. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about season three, he's like, it's prison break. You feel like you want to get him back in prison. And we did the Panamanian, mm-hmm. Kind of pivot, which worked for us creatively. So it was definitely running and gunning, giving yourself a month, 2 months.
Uh-huh.
So a complete fire drill.
A kind of responsible running and gunning.
There you go.
Was it? I mean, because for what it's worth, I have no memories of ever going, oh my God, you guys, we're shooting tomorrow. We don't have a script.
Oh, no, and never.
That's to your credit, because there are a lot of shows, especially back then, that kind of worked that way. You know, there are shows where people were learning their lines in the makeup trailer because things came in hot off the presses. And the fact that I've got a revised full blue that's got my shooting notes in it means that we weren't shooting triple canary insane revisions. But given that, one of the things that we've talked, we had Silas on, who's phenomenal. And he was like, I auditioned for a 2-episode arc, and then I got to play all the way through. Like, what were the surprises as you guys got dailies and cuts going, oh, we got to get more, we can't kill Abruzzi. He's amazing. Like, were there, because it felt sometimes like a conversation between production and the writer's room, and you guys would see what we did with what you gave us.
That's right. Actors, as you know, make their own work, or they hit in the ass their way off of a job, which is a fact. Again, no one's here to defend themselves, but there were characters or actors who were a little unhappy and made it known, and those characters, maybe it's a prison show. Anybody can change, and they did.
Yeah.
Not to be petulant about it or have retribution. You're just kind of like, I'm just kind of weighing what's worth it for me and what's worth it for us as a staff.
Mm-hmm.
But we always had that available to us. But then, as you mentioned, Silas, he was in there, or even like the tweener character, it just kind of worked. And so there's plenty of track here going ahead. We were going to take it as long as we could. It's funny when people look at the seasons, and some people might think that maybe season 4 was lacking or whatever was. When they ask me about it, I'm like, I was going to work on that show with my friends in the writer's room for as long as they like. When you get, like, hey, you want to do a 2-episode special final break? Yes, of course. Does that mean we can be in a room for whatever you guys want? But it was always a pleasant surprise to see a character on that show or any other show who really brings it, and it's just the right actor at the right time, the right role, and then they just make their own path,
So speaking of on something you just mentioned, I came back, as did Paul, for season 5 without you.
Yeah.
Where were you? We missed you.
We missed you.
I like the way you put this, not to say anything about, people who aren't there to defend themselves, but I remember getting a script early on, and it said, Sarah and Jacob sit down and have a glass of wine. And I was like, okay, so just checking, is this the beginning of a relapse? And they were like, no, good point. And changed it. And I was like, oh man, I would really love to have our original writers here, because there is this sense that we very much co-created this story. And I apologize if that feels like I'm taking more credit than deserved.
No, but please,
it felt to me like there was a sort of partnership between what you guys were doing and what we were trying to translate with our chattering teeth in the condemned prison. But so what happened to you in season 5? And again, we can cut this if you don't want to talk about it. But
I was in an overall deal at Universal working on the Chicago show. So I wasn't available to work on it because it was a project. And now all the writers.
So we have Dick Wolf to blame, is what you're saying.
They were, you guys are right.
Fair enough.
Everybody
fair
was enough. Locked elsewhere, so they couldn't go over and help.
And I'm sure you've seen that there's a, not a reboot exactly, but a continuation of the universe.
Yes.
Is that right? and that's coming soon. Hulu?
Are you writing?
It's a reboot. And
it is a reboot. Okay.
Yeah. Dawn is an EP on it.
Oh, and good.
Nice. I haven't seen anything. I had actually pitched out a season 6 version of it with the original characters when I was at ABC. And because ABC was tied to 20th, so then there was some little bit of, I could do that. So I went there, pitched it twice, gained some traction. Then I leave ABC to come back to Universal, and I there went that. So by the time everything got resurfaced or revisited, they were like, okay, well, enough time has passed, maybe we do a reboot. So a reboot is in the works. How far along it is, I don't exactly know.
Well, but it's the same world. They're not starting over, right? It's some kind of sidequel thing.
It's the story of Manche and how he gets out of Fox River having fallen. That would actually be amazing.
It could be.
A little quick inside baseball for people who are listening who might not fully understand. Part of what happened is Prison Break was made by, I believe, 20th Century Fox.
Yep.
For Fox. 20th was then sold to Disney. And for a long time, I remember there being a bit of a turf war over who owns the rights to Prison Break. And so for a while, you know, I imagine you know this, Matt, but most of us in the cast who are on social media, probably half of my feed is people going, when do we get more episodes of this show? It's extraordinary from all over the world.
Yep.
And there are times in the past where I've wanted to say, you guys, there is such, like, I felt like Prison Break was the dog in the divorce. Everyone's like, I don't know what house it's going to live in. I don't know how to take care of this thing. And so for a long time, I was like, this just isn't feasible from a... Anyway, so that's, you know, as you're talking about working for ABC, which allows you to do something with 20th, which why you could reboot it. And then, of course, there's, you know, I think Wentworth understandably saying, I'm done playing straight characters.
Right.
Which could be a remarkable reveal where Michael and Sarah turn out to be besties who move on to other relationships.
Wow.
But do you want to tell this story? How you met your wife on our show? Because we had divorces on our show, but as far as I know, you were... Oh, no, you were not the only marriage. Didn't Silas meet his wife on our show, too?
Yes, Silas and KK.
Silas and KK met on the show, but, you know...
Married and divorced.
I was going through a separation divorce. Fairly, you know, recent. Told a few people. And it's funny, when you go through divorce and your married friends are like, okay, be single for 2 years and tell us everything. Got it. Will do. Yeah. I told my then agent, he's like, you know, Dawn's going through one. And we'd worked together, obviously, but never like socialized or talked to her about it. Oh, shit. And then even though we worked together for like a year, sparks, why not? Dinner, lunch turns into dinner. You know how it works. So I had the full intention, or my friends had the full intention. That'd be single.
Right.
Carousing. I was single for
12 hours.
Less than they anticipated.
I mean, she's an extraordinary woman. She's an amazing human
being.
Very
lucky.
I remember, because, you know, you guys were, this was all happening away from set. And I remember thinking there was a typo on the call sheet. And I was like, you guys, it's Matt Olmsted and Dawn Peruse. And they were like, funny story. And I was like, wait, serious? I was like, the great onset romance that always happens in season one was between our head writer and our executive producer. It wasn't actors.
The actors felt like, wait, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
It's supposed to be our territory.
This is set. This is location shit. This is LA shit.
Funny.
So did you guys get married between seasons 1 and 2? Or
we got married right before the weekend before the last writer's strike, which was, I mean, whatever, how long ago it was.
2007.
Yeah.
That was the year my first kid was born. Yep.
So I think season 3 then, because I was already on Private Practice.
Anything, as you look back on it, and again, this is not a gotcha question, but is there anything that you'd do differently? I ask partly because Paul and I, as we're rewatching, I feel like I'm watching a different person. I have almost no attachment to this, whatever, 26-year-old, brand new, barely have ever done TV human being that I'm watching. So not in a sort of actually actor neurotic way, but I look at it and I go, there are certain choices I would make differently now because I've been doing it longer. Mm. This obviously wasn't early in your career, but when you think about it and you look back on it, are there things, you know, you mentioned there's certain jokes that you wouldn't be able to tell now and certain things you couldn't get away with. And by the way, in a minute, we are going to get back to how the hell you got the name Teabag past the network. But
We've been making up stories about it the whole time about how this happened. But anyway, go on with your questions.
Sarah. Yeah, I mean, is there anything that you would do
story-wise
I could go back and you told me I got to re-experience every second as it played out. I would go back and re-experience every second. When I tell you, it was going to cross the board, close sale, glorious experience.
Wow.
I go back to the writers. And not only did we become friends, and I admired their talent, and they helped. We tabled everything. So I, as showrunner, go in there, and I would get notes from them on my script, which oftentimes doesn't happen.
But
we were gay. But beyond that, it was the last of those writers' rooms that were, you could be kind of nakedly emotional and you could volunteer personal stuff and riotously funny, but people shared shit and people would, and I explained to someone once upon a time that it wasn't directed at, people weren't getting ribbed or needled. All the energy went to the center of the room, if you know what I mean. So people were volunteering at the center of the room. So you weren't targeted, but you would also volunteer. Some people would be less so, but the kind of the core top set, Karen and Nick Santora and certainly Zach Estrin, you really got to know people because, but also you give people shit. And and that doesn't exist anymore, I think for good reason, because there are certain people who took advantage of that or singled people out or maybe people didn't feel comfortable. So because of that, nowadays, a lot of great work's done. I'm in a writer's room nowadays. And it's as sterile as an operating room, that no one brings up anything because you just don't want to go to HR. You're very careful, but this is the way it goes. You're here to write and get good material. When I look back on those moves in terms of just like, how did we come up with that? Where did that story come from? Mm-hmm. But beyond that, like seeing the talent that was going on in Chicago, then Dallas and Los Angeles, as you know, you've got to clear 5 hurdles to get a show there. You have 10 things have to come together, and they don't sometimes. But I look back on that experience, and then the writers will communicate in group text, we'll get together and see each other. There'll never be another one like it. Not for me.
Yeah.
Can we go back to Teabag now?
Yeah.
Let's
go back to Teabag. Okay, so.
We have spent so many episodes going, did they not know? And what was the moment when somebody at Fox was like, you guys, I just found out what teabag means.
Right.
Like, tell us.
I'll give you, so teabag is similar to later. So I'll back up first. There's a character later called Avocado Balls Johnson.
Yeah.
Paul Schering would kind of, he just kind of threw it out there. Okay, so Avocado Balls Johnson comes in. And so then we're like, well, what do we call him? Well, we already called him in the room Avocado Balls Johnson, but we can't call that. We're like, how do we crack this? So we're like, let's do an avocado and then have a hyphenate last name on the script, B-A-L-Z hyphen Johnson, Avocado Balls Johnson. And it went through and they did it and the Avocados Balls Johnson were like, so that was kind of informed by the
like Munch's Carpets?
Okay, we had a whole discussion about why is his name Avocado? I don't think we heard his last name.
I don't think you get his last name.
Like
it was avocado, and someone later says, you know, get Balls Johnson down. I can't remember how it was backed up or tucked in. But
sorry, is that a thing that guys talk about avocado balls? Because
no,
if it is, I'm learning right now.
But now I can't get it out of my head. And then now it also not just the sexual abuse he's heaping on poor tweener.
Poor tweener.
The fact that tweener went at his genitals with a straight razor.
That's right.
Has a Now I can picture it even more specifically than I was picturing it before.
To grasp, yes. So early on, we're talking about the teabag character. And again, the nickname comes up and someone mentions that back then there was a slang term for something that I think fraternities back then might have been somewhat, it's an act that someone does when you get teabagged. So the
don't
name
look it up,
comes
guys.
Up.
Don't look it up.
Don't Google. Nobody Google that.
I know the other one. And So we're calling him Teabag in the room. Then again, we're like, what's his name? Well, we've been calling him Teabag. And well, we can't get that across. And then we're like, well, let's have his name be the entree into the nickname. I can't remember who it was who was like, what about Timothy? And then we toss around Bagwell. Timothy Bagwell, and he goes by Teabag for short. So that's how, because keep in mind, when standards and practices, the censors, they don't hear it, they read it. So if you see Timothy Bagwell, and then it's like Teabag under that, you can kind of sneak it in a little bit. But that's in one of those also, how we got that through, I have no idea. And it just...
It is amazing. I think it is amazing.
The moment I keep fixating on is... Okay, it goes through, and now it's 5 episodes have aired, and then somebody at Fox goes, oh, shit.
And then Dana Walden goes, get me Matt Olmsted.
And then somebody goes, are you going to tell standard of practices that they missed this? I'm not going to tell them. Are you going to tell them? No, I didn't miss it. And then it's
too late.
And I mean, in theory, something similar but far less raunchy happened with C-Note, right? That he becomes Benjamin Franklin. Because he's been called C-Note? Or did that start with him being Benjamin Miles Franklin and somebody?
That was in the original pilot. I remember Paul had read a couple kind of prison books, the real life.
Yeah.
And there was a character named C-Note in that, and he liked that, I believe.
Okay.
So then he just kind of designed a name that would support, I believe.
Amazing. We do have to go soon, but I do have a couple more questions. Paul, do you have anything else you want to...
I mean, I could go on forever. So Sarah, you hit it and I'll see what comes.
Well, this is, since we're on names, this is itty bitty, but we just watched this episode together, like just now.
Yeah.
And when Michael comes out of the Pope's office, having subdued him and stuck him in the closet, he says to the receptionist, he's on a call with Druschel from the DOC. Is that a name with any significance? Was that somebody's cat?
That was my assistant, Jeff Druschel. He says, there you go.
There you go. Okay.
Always a connection.
Yep. Always a connection. Because, the one about Seth cracked me up because, of course, we went to the same university. And I was like, oh, my God, they turned this poor kid into a prison bitch. But then gave him a writing career, which is great.
Do you remember? Sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
Do you remember, was it so many of us ended up with our first names? C.O. Mac, Paul, Danny. Sarah was just a coincidence.
Yeah.
Was that somebody's somebody's preference, or was it a tongue in cheek thing that one person came up with that everyone liked? Like, where did it come for?
I can't remember exactly where that came from. I think there was a little bit of convenience, and also might have been in the room, kind of like it stuck. So
I loved it.
You're lucky that they didn't have a pet name for you that you wouldn't like. At least you know. You became Paul and not like...
As far as I know.
I have no idea. That's true.
I was not in that writer's room.
I now have an answer to your question. Is there anything I do differently? Very early on, when I'm talking to Paul Churi, and I'm like, the tattoos, what happens when he gets out of prison? He's like, it'll always happen. Like, well, he's not planning on being in prison forever. What if we do... Later, we described that it's like a high-level kind of henna that he put in there, but it's going to fade out slowly because he's planning on being out in 2 months.
And then
we went away. I look back and like, here we are lasering them off, which is one of the first plot points in the show. I'm like, should have done the goddamn henna.
Because they were 5 hours on to put those tattoos on. That was brutal.
From a production standpoint, it became a nightmare.
Yeah, no, I could see that.
Yeah.
For sure. Getting sleeved up. But dealing with that stuff, funny, once upon a time, I read a quote on a Teabag. Carve your successes in stone, write your failures in the sand.
Ooh.
And I look back and I remember some things. I'm like, I'd forgotten about that because I wrote all that shit in the sand. I only remember the shit that I carved in stone, which is you guys, the staff, the accomplishment and the whole experience. Getting out of a marriage that wasn't working out and meeting the love of my life. These are all things I've carved in stand, or rather carved in stone.
It's amazing.
I'm going to, I might get that tattooed. Carve your successes in stone, write your failures in sand. That's
really
bloody
excellent.
Beautiful. That's a great place to stop.
And great advice I could take. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to wrap up. But also, we have some fan questions from Instagram for Matt. So we'll be right back.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. We have a few questions from fans who wrote in on at Prison Break Podcast on Instagram. Simon, at Simon Podcast asks, was it always known from an early on that Michael and Link would be revealed as half-brothers?
It's funny, when I came on the show, it's one of my first questions to Paul Sheeran. Like, why do they have different last names? Like, it's so different. Like, people are going to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, okay.
I love a writer that doesn't have the... I love a writer who's like, because it's cool. And then somebody else has to figure it out.
That was exactly right.
But also, if they had the same name, they would never be put in the same prison.
There you go. So it was, what, same dad, different moms. The dad was out, the mom's out. We figured it out. But that was addressed very early on.
Yeah, yeah.
To that.
At Caitlin_XM asks, is there a favorite line you can remember writing yourself coming out of your... fingers prison break that you would be like did you write "We're not breaking out of a Jamba Juice, gentlemen"? Which is
is my all-time favorite line from the show.
That was
That's Zach. That's breaking out of a Jamba Juice, gentlemen. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So is there a favorite line that you remember, you Matt Olmsted?
I remember other lines from other writers who I was enamored with and enamored by.
Can you give us a few written in stone lines that if you just say, someone says Prison Break, favorite lines to you, is there anything that pops out to you? And if not, that's okay too.
Yeah, I can't think of any. There's a couple of Teabag's lines I didn't want to say out loud.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know.
I will say that his introductory scene in the bleachers, where you first see him, written by Paul Sheeran. Again, it's one of those scenes where like, you could not do that nowadays, but also at the same time, you're like, this is real prison shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this goes on, but I was like listening to a couple of the things that he says to try and woo Michael, and this animus is directed towards, the black prisoners who are working out across the way. I'm like, whoa,
yeah.
I forgot, like he went for it. So I don't admire the lines because they make me happy. I admire like the fact that there was a kind of a bravery it took to like, they're going to talk like prisoners talk.
Oh, we do have to wrap it up there, but we want to thank everyone for listening. And here's the call-in question of the week, Matt. We have a call-in line. 4013-P-BREAK is our telephone.
Just the letter P.
Yeah, just the letter P. 4013-P-BREAK. Should we do last meals, Sarah? Should we just ask
people? We'll do that.
People, call in and say, what would your, if you're on death row, what would your last meal be? And Matt, that's one of our wrap-up questions for you.
Yeah, so that's we've got a couple of wrap-up questions we do for our guests here. if you would be good enough to answer them. So if you were on death row, what would your last meal be?
I've recently entertained this, talked to my daughters about the last meal. I would go for a seafood platter. But I'm talking tiered.
Yeah.
A little plate of spaghetti.
Okay.
Cold beer, and I would finish with a good chocolate chip cookie, and I'm good.
Outstanding.
Wow. Fantastic answer. Well thought out.
So then our last question is just a fill in the blank. We've answered this ourselves. All of our guests have answered it. Feel free to take your time. You're a writer. There's no pressure, but it should be brilliant. Don't get sent to prison, but if you do go to prison, blank. I'll give you that again. Don't get sent to prison. But if you do go to prison, and this came from Paul, who had heard somebody once say, don't get sent to prison, but if you do go to prison, quickly establish dominance.
Mm-hmm. Don't go to prison.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you do go to prison, mm-hmm. do what you can through your attorney, public defender, mm-hmm. based on your own criminal background, hopefully it's minimal, mm-hmm. to get sent to a prison like Joliet Prison, where they sent the kind of minimal risk, kind of old head prisoners, which was evidenced by there were the topiary and there'd be bonsai trees, and people were there just to do their time. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go to the modern pod style prison like mm-hmm. Stateville, nearby to Joliet, where good luck. If you can get yourself to the minimal risk prison, you're going to be a lot.
This is maybe the most practical answer we've gotten.
Yeah.
That is really, really great.
Fully fleshed out, as you would expect from a showrunner.
I have one of my favorite lines.
What's your favorite line?
The original finale, where Michael is dead, and it's showing all the characters of where they are before you go to the headstone.
This is season four.
Season four.
Okay.
And you see the quote that he had established at the very beginning, be the change you want to see in the world. It was a great book in payoff. And we see your character with the boy, with his son in the market. And I remember reading that in the writer's room. We screened every cut together. We gave notes together, as been established. We're all in tears. And the scene where Paul's character has been elected to office, he's walking out.
Oh.
And the widow of the former Danny's widow, you remember me? What? And you say he was a great hero, American hero. And then she spits in your face mm-hmm. and you get in the car. And I remember texting with you a couple of times on this because the editor, when your character got in the limo, cranked it down. And I found a song that played over it. This, I can't remember what the name of the song was, but it really kind of fit. And right when the song turned, he cranked it down and a flashbulb kind of illuminated you. And I was just like, this is a magical ending of all the characters culminating in this kind of confluence of energy where they're all going to pay off as they walk off the beach. Now, we came back and another season, the whole thing. But at that time,
mm-hmm. That was the end of the show.
It's so cathartic and such a payoff and so rewarding. But the idea of your character fraudulently as a politician, yes, of course, Danny was an American hero and he gets spit in the face, which was kind of like prison breaking body. That line comes to mind.
That's cool.
That was so fun to shoot. And it was great.
I remember real quick, it was written, she spits on your shoes. I'm like, I can't write that she's going to spit in your face. You said, have her spit in my face. I'm like, go right ahead.
Yep.
I love it.
Absolutely.
So good.
God, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. I remember that exchange. Cool. I remember the whole email exchange about where do you think he would be? It was so, and I think it's the Sarah's thing about, where do you think Kellerman would be now? We're thinking this, we're thinking that. Do you have any thoughts? It was just so welcoming and organic. It was really, really cool. Matt, thank you. Thank you so much. This has been just wonderful.
Thank you.
This is good fun. This is good for my heart. God.
I'm glad to be doing this. I'm glad that you guys fondly remember it.
We
didn't know. We were alone. The writers were alone. But I was like, You only get so many golden gigs. You really do. If you're lucky enough, you all are to kind of put out a career. That itself is a huge victory. But you only get so many golden gigs, and Prison Break across the board was as gold as it gets.
Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is a Caliber Studio production. Your hosts have been friends, but not besties, Sarah Wayne Callies and Paul Edelstein. Our prison warden has been producer Ben Haber. Our head of Jailhouse Rock is Paul Edelstein, who made the music for this podcast. Keeping us slim and trim, the prison yard, has been sound designer and editor, the great Jeff Schmidt. Keeping us up to date on the outside world is production assistant Drew Austin. Our prison artist, logo, and brand designer is John Dinziato and Little Big Brands. Check them out at www.littlebigbrands.com. Follow us on Instagram at Prison Break Podcast. Email us at prisonbreaking@caliber-studio.com and call us at 401-3-PBREAK. Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul has been a Caliber Studio production. Thank you for listening.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.